name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 46. I'm recording it on Wednesday, November 19th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Investing is a Science When It's Not Science Fiction. What prompted me to record a podcast on this topic is an article that I was looking at a couple days ago. I think it was Monday. And it was talking about, you see these articles all the time, they're talking about what's going to happen to stocks, you know, in the coming days. And the fellow was referring to resistance points. And I don't follow, this is a term from technical analysis, and I don't follow technical analysis well enough to give you any details of a description, but I have a vague understanding of what they're talking about. The idea is that technical analysis, the purpose is really to study investor emotion. And the concept is that when stocks go to certain points that have some sort of, or at least are purported to have some sort of psychological significance, how they react to hitting those points gives a signal of where stocks are headed in coming days. So if the low that we went to, say in October, was a Dow of 7,800, I don't know that that's the case, I'm just pulling that number out of the air, for example, but if that were the low and we went down to 7,850, we went down very close to that low. They call that testing the low. And then if we jump up off of that, I think that's considered a good sign. That's considered, oh, investors don't believe we're going to go below the earlier lows. And therefore, once we get very close to that, they become filled with optimism and prices shoot upward. But the purpose of this podcast is not to argue whether technical analysis has anything to it or not. My personal belief is that it does not, but I am not dogmatic on that point. I'd be happy to listen to anyone who wanted to try to persuade me that it does. I haven't studied it enough to say for sure. But the point of the podcast is to comment on this strange situation where I'm always talking about the errors of the passive investing model. And the passive investing model, just to give a very brief summary of what all of the podcast and all the articles at the site are about, passive investing is the dominant model of understanding how stock investing works, dominant today. And passive investing says that the market is efficient, you can't outsmart the market, you can't know more than the market, and the market sets the price does a good job of setting the price, and you can't determine what the price of stock should be any better than the market as a whole can. And therefore, there's no need to change your stock allocation when prices change. So even when we get to insanely overvalued price levels, you should just stick with the same old stock allocation because there's no way that you can know where stocks are headed in the future. And I reject that idea. I reject the efficient market theory. I reject the passive investing model. And I urge, as a replacement to that model, something I call rational investing, which says the opposite. It says you must take valuations into account when developing your stock allocation. And when prices get absurdly high, you must lower your stock allocation a bit if you hope to be a successful long-term investor, because otherwise you're going, sooner or later, you're going to get crushed. And when you get crushed, you will become emotional and you will end up doing all the wrong things. That passive investing is a mindset that causes you, just throughout your investing life, to almost always make the wrong decision. Rational investing urges that we just acknowledge the realities that stocks are sometimes a wonderful value proposition, sometimes a poor value proposition, sometimes just a sort of good value proposition. And we should always keep the realities in mind, and that all investing advice should aim to teach us the realities rather than to cover the realities. And I would say that passive investing, the dominant theme of passive investing is covering up the realities, keeping blind to the realities, keeping ourselves ignorant of how stock investing really works. Now, that's the dominant model today. So when you see people writing in to a, say, a column, you know, could be in Money Magazine or could be in your daily newspaper. I remember a question that was asked at the Scott Burns column. Scott Burns is a columnist in Dallas for the Dallas Morning News. And someone said, this is a long time ago, I don't recall the details. I remember writing a blog entry about it, but the person asked Scott, he said, it just doesn't make sense. You know, valuations are so high, it just doesn't make sense to think that you know, there's not going to be a price crash. Shouldn't I be lowering my stock allocation? And Scott said, oh, no. You know, just efficient market theory, passive, blah, 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 blah. You know, a standard official answer. And, of course, the guy now has lost, you know, 40, 45% of his life savings because that was bad advice. But I don't. It's obviously not just Scott Burns giving that advice. That advice is omnipresent. You know, you get these magazines. Fidelity has a magazine. Vanguard has a magazine. I remember people giving me that advice at my place of employment. They hired a some type of, you know, I don't know what they were exactly. Some type of consultant came in and they talked to us all about investing. I think they were encouraging us to contribute more to the 401k plan. And the 401k plan was a good deal because of the tax breaks you got, but they were also talking about how stocks work. And this is the line they were pitching, the passive investing line. So, you know, when employers are bringing people into your place of employment to tell you this stuff, I think it's fair to say it's become conventional wisdom. So on the one hand, we have this conventional wisdom which says, oh, you know, like timing doesn't work. That's part of the conventional wisdom. And I reject that out of hand. I've looked at the historical data, and while short-term timing may not work, I personally believe it does not, the evidence that long-term timing works is just overwhelming. Long-term timing has always worked. Take a look at the calculators at my website, and you'll see. You know, lowering your stock allocation in response to high prices has always worked in the long term, not always in the short term. So we have this strange advice that we should not adjust our stock allocations in response to prices. I think it's strange. It's a counterintuitive idea. The intuitive thing to do would be to lower your stock allocation, to protect yourself. When you know a price crash is coming, you should want to protect your assets, not to expose them to loss. That just makes no sense. But that's the conventional advice today. And if that were the only thing going on, I wouldn't like it, but you could at least say, well, you know, the experts got it wrong. You know, they're giving bad advice, but they got it wrong, and hopefully that will change. But there's this other thing that goes on, which is that the same newspapers that run columns like the Scott Burns column, and as I say, many, many others, not just Scott Burns, advising people to keep their money in stocks, you know, to buy and hold, to stay the course, to not time the market, all these things. Those same newspapers and magazines and websites and all the rest, they will run articles on where stocks are going, and the articles will include technical analysis concepts. So this article I was reading, I don't know where it was, whether it was the Wall Street Journal or what, I'm not sure. But it was just a couple days ago. You see this sort of thing all the time. And they're just saying, oh, they just sort of throw it in. There's nothing, you know, nothing remarkable about it. They just say, oh, we're close to breaking resistance points. And the guy was saying, if we touch this resistance point and we don't go lower, then prices are going to shoot up. You know, we're going to have a big jump. Well, maybe we'll have a big jump and maybe we won't. I don't think there's any way for anybody to know. But it's remarkable to me that the same newspaper could run a column saying invest passively, which I think is wrong, and then they could also run a column saying look for resistance points or place your confidence in people who look for resistance points. And they're clearly saying that when they run an article and they quote these people, which is the idea that stands up to scrutiny. Has no one bothered to check it out? You know, if the evidence supports passive investing, well, shouldn't they stop talking about resistance points? Shouldn't they stop peddling this nonsense? And on the other hand, if technical analysis checks out and, you know, the resistance point stuff is significant, shouldn't they stop peddling passive investing? Shouldn't they stop peddling the stuff where they tell people to buy and hold? Can both things be true? Two opposite ways of understanding how stock investing works? Can they both be true? Now, you could say they don't know which is true. So they, you know, some of the time they do one and some of the time they do the other. And to the extent that's so, fine. But what's weird about it is when they present the advice on what to do with your allocation, the passive investing, and they use the passive investing model to craft the advice, they don't give any suggestion in there that they're not sure about it. They don't say, some people recommend this, but some people recommend the other thing. They just act like it's, the way they present it is as if it's true. They'll say, there are studies that show this, you know, and it's sort of like, oh, well, I guess that's it then. I guess that settles it. But they don't really believe in those studies, because if they did, they wouldn't be talking about technical analysis in the column, you know, on the same page sometimes. This just makes no sense. And you know, why are they talking about these resistance points if they don't believe in them? Are they just trying to fill up space in the paper? You get that feeling sometimes, don't you? They're just trying to fill up space in the paper. Now, this is one on which I'm not in total agreement, but I'm in large agreement with my friends at bogleheads.org. That's a board. There's a lot of smart people at bogleheads.org, but the leadership of that board is comprised of passive investing dogmatists. And I do think of them as my friends, but I say it somewhat ironically because they don't think of me as a friend. But I've seen them complain about this phenomenon. I remember a thread in which they were talking about Money Magazine, and they have this, they get very worked up, and they use all this harsh language. But anyone who doesn't agree with passive investing is termed financial porn in their eyes. They're very dogmatic, and they were saying that about Money Magazine. Now, Money Magazine carries columnists who are supportive of the passive investing model. I think Jason Zweig is one of them, and there are others. But they will write columns supportive of the ideas of these people. But they don't like it that Money Magazine will also have a cover story saying, you know, 10 hot funds you should check out today. And they have a point. It's weird. It's weird. Obviously, there's something going on where the publication, you know, the way they will describe it, they will say, oh, the publication includes some legitimate stuff, you know, because they know that that's the truth. But they also include this phony stuff on the cover to, you know, to sucker people in. That's a little too cynical for my taste. I think there's some of that going on, but it's a little too cynical. And they will say, oh, passive investing is too boring. You can't sell newspapers with passive investing. Once you believe in passive investing, there's nothing new to learn. You understand it all. And so in order to have something new to write about every month, they have to include these other discredited theories. You know, maybe to some extent, but I don't really buy the idea that passive investing is boring, personally. I know what they're getting at. They're saying if you just stick with the same stock allocation, it's boring. Certainly, passive investors don't, you know, they're not looking for hot stock tips. But it's not boring. There's a lot of, the success of the bogleheads.org forum shows that. It's one of the, it's probably the biggest investing discussion board on the internet. So if it's so boring, why are there so many people there? Why are there so many people participating and reading the threads? And why are the threads, some of them, you know, hundreds of posts, if it's so boring? How do they always come up with new ideas for threads every day if it's so boring? I there's something to what they're saying, but they oversell it. It's they go too far with it. But they are right. They are right to point out an inconsistency. There's something weird going on in Investo world when the same magazine supports passive investing and technical analysis or whatever it happens to be, stock picking, you know, some theory that is in contrast to passive investing. And that's what I'm trying to explore in this podcast. What the passive investing people would say is that their approach is science. I think if you ask the average person, why does Money Magazine write about both passive investing and stock picking or technical analysis or whatever, you know, value investing, whatever, probably the average person's answer would be, well, they're competing theories. I think that's how the average person would answer that. They're competing theories, so you can have a discussion of one, you can have a discussion of the other, and different people can read and decide what they think. And that sounds fair enough, right? That sounds balanced enough, reasonable enough. But the problem with that is passive investing is by nature dogmatic. Passive investors don't say we think that the market is efficient. They say we know it is efficient. Passive investing is a dogmatic philosophy. It's not a philosophy that brooks any disagreement on the core questions. I can give a great example of this. The example is so telling that, frankly, I do not know whether these people were engaging in a put-on, whether they were joking or whether they were serious. But I'll tell you the facts, and you can decide for yourself. I go back and forth as to whether they were joking or whether they were serious. I think I have come to believe that they were largely serious, perhaps joking a little bit, but more serious than joking. But this is something that happened at the Financial Webring Forum. At the Financial Webring Forum, I was involved in a thread on, there was a guy there who did a chart comparing valuation-informed indexing. That's the approach to indexing that I recommend at the site. It's non-passive, a non-passive approach to indexing. You buy index funds, but you change your stock allocation in response to dramatic changes in stock prices. You have a lower allocation at times of high prices, a higher allocation at times of low prices. Valuation-informed indexing. So he did a chart, and he showed the results for valuation-informed indexing versus the results for the conventional approach to buy and hold, where you would adopt a stock allocation, whatever it would be, say 70%, and then just stick to it through thick and thin, no matter what prices are. And his chart showed that valuation-informed indexing is superior historically. It's performed better. And the remarkable thing, of course, we didn't know this at the time, but it showed that it was superior even before the price crash. You know, buy and hold has now experienced a loss of about 45% in the past 15 months. That hadn't even happened yet, and valuation-informed indexing was ahead. So valuation-informed indexing is by far superior to the conventional buy and hold approach. And there was a lot of interest in this thread. People were saying, this is fascinating, you know, tell us more. And, you know, they had questions. They wanted to explore how to go about it. And I was answering the questions. I probably contributed, I don't know, the number of posts. I wouldn't be surprised if I had 30 posts on that thread. But lots of people were participating. But there are a couple guys who own the forum who are dogmatic passive investors. And they couldn't tolerate it that someone was discussing the realities of investing, and the realities were showing that passive investing doesn't work. So they freaked out. And they had some borderline abusive posting going on, and that wasn't helping. People were still asking questions, and I was still responding. And then ultimately, one of the owners came on and he said, I'm deleting this thread from the investing section of the board. And somebody got on and he said, why? You know, he dared to ask the obvious question, why are you deleting it? There's nothing abusive here. No one, you know, there's no cause. And he said, oh, there is cause. He says, look at this post by Rob. Rob, look at this paragraph. He starts it out with the words, I believe. So I said, I believe, you know, I don't know what the sentence, I believe valuations affect long-term returns, and therefore investors should adjust their allocations in response to valuations, you know, something like that. But the first two words were, I believe. And that was very deliberate. I was trying to avoid contention. I knew that there were dogmatic passive investors in this community, and I know that they get very hot when you talk about what the historical data says. So I was, you know, trying to say this is my opinion rather than saying it's fact. I was trying to be, you know, cooperative, compromising, whatever you want to call it, gentle, whatever you want to call it. And he says, we can't allow people to say what they believe on an investing board. Investing is a science. Passive investing is proven. We know it's right. We don't need to entertain different opinions. We don't need to look at charts showing that there are better approaches. We're science. We have studies. Academic studies. We can't allow the words, I believe. That's a violation of the rules in this community to say, I believe something. You have to say, I know, and you have to pound your fist, and you have to say, I will not tolerate dissension. No disagreements. That's passive investing. You see, that's what passive investing is. That's why I dislike it. That's why I'm opposed to it. Now, obviously, the most people who practice passive investing never think about it that way, and they don't engage in that sort of rhetoric. But if you go to a passive investing expert, they will, because a passive investing expert cannot tolerate questioning. Because if you report to a passive investing expert, in quotes, what the historical data says, the historical data shows that passive investing has never worked. So they're sort of in a bind. The only way passive investing can survive is that it never be questioned. As soon as passive investing is questioned, it falls to the ground. It tumbles to the ground. So this guy, in a way, he was being very revealing. I, of course, oppose what he did. I think that that community should have been permitted to have the discussions they wanted to have. But it sure does tell us a lot about what passive investing is all about, that these people would ban a thread. They would take down a thread solely because it contained a post in that thread contained the words, I believe. That's a bannable offense to a passive investing dogmatist. And so that's what this podcast is about. You have to ask yourself, well, why? Why? Why is it a bannable offense? Why is it so horrible to say the words, I believe? And the answer is, passive investing poses as a science. Another great example of this, I've mentioned this several times on podcasts, but I keep coming back to it because some things just explain. They shed so much light that I want people to know about it. After the stock crash a few weeks ago, there was a poster at the bogleheads.org who asked Taylor Larimore. He said, Taylor Larimore is the co-author of the book, The Bogleheads Guide to Investing. And this fellow said, look, you know, we've had a practice of not permitting people to question our ideas. Maybe we should open this board up a little bit. Maybe we should allow some honest posting on valuations because maybe we're wrong about some things. Maybe we don't know everything. Maybe we're going over a cliff. Maybe we're going to lose all our retirement money. Maybe we need to open things up a little bit. And Taylor Larimore said, oh, no. He says, we know it all. Other boards might allow discussion, but we don't need to allow discussion. We know it all. That's what passive investing is all about. We've got studies, don't you see? We've got studies. Now, is that a science? That's the, is passive investing truly a science, or is it science fiction? I say it's science fiction. Taylor is right. There are studies that support passive investing. His statement is correct. That's an important point to understand. There are studies that support passive investing. Not one or two or three. There are many. Hundreds. Hundreds. And these studies date back to the 1960s. So there are hundreds of studies, perhaps thousands, going back four decades. So what Taylor is saying is true. And studies are, you know, they obviously do have, there's science to them. The, you know, it's not physics, but the people doing the studies are academics. They're doing it in an academic setting. They have peer review. They use numbers. The numbers go into tables. The tables are checked. People check to whether see whether the calculations are accurate. There's science there. So is Taylor right that passive investing is a science? I say he's not. The reason I say he's not is that while it is true that there are many studies supporting passive investing, many studies supporting the efficient market theory, there are also a good number of studies that show that the efficient market theory is nonsense. And there are a good number of studies that show that passive investing does not work in the real world. That's also true. Now, if you do it by weight, you know, if you say, let's put all the studies that support passive investing on this side of the scale, and all the studies that say passive investing is gibberish on this side of the scale, the side with the passive investing studies is heavier. So if that's what you're going to go by, if you're going to make it a popularity contest, then Taylor's right. But is that science? Is that the way science works? Is you know, there was a time when most people believed the world was flat. And then someone went out in a boat and discovered, no, it's actually round. It's not flat. When that guy came back, was the way to test his... There were obviously people upset about this. They had you know, there were map-producing companies. And they said, all our maps show that the world is flat. Now, we've got to change the maps? We don't want to change these maps. We got textbooks and we got, you know, we've got descriptions of how the world ends at such and such a point. You want us to take back the textbooks and reprint them? You gonna pay for that, friend? What do you mean the world's round? Who are you? Some guy in a boat? World's flat. Everybody knows that. Everybody knew it until you started messing up our game. Could you please go away? Please go away. With your ideas that the world is round. It's flat. We all know it. The Academy of Scientists say it's flat. We took a vote. All of the people who have invested their lives in showing that it's flat agree that it's flat. We're all in agreement, except for you, this boat guy. Go back on your boat. Go float around the round world. Just stay out of our business. If they took a poll at that time and they said, how many studies show the world's flat? How many show it's round? There was clearly more studies that showed it was flat. One guy saying it's round. One crazy guy. But science doesn't care. Science isn't a popularity contest. Science is a quest for truth. It's a never-ending quest. It's a quest where we learn things. We advance because of our learning. Then we discover mistakes. We acknowledge the mistakes. We fix them. And we learn new things. That's how science works. So what Taylor is pointing to is not science. What Taylor is pointing to is the trappings of science. He's saying there are pieces of paper that have tables in them and that have peer review stamps on them that say passive investing works. But there are also, you know, he doesn't say this part. He doesn't point out to the reader, don't you understand that whenever anyone shows up on this board pointing to one of the studies showing that what I say in my book is wrong, that I engage in a smear campaign to have that person removed? Or now that I actually have ownership of the board, when the board was at Vanguard Diehards, when the board was at Morningstar, I used smear campaigns to get rid of these people. Now I don't do smear campaigns. Now I have the power just to remove them with a wave of my hand. I'm in favor of science, but I only go so far. I'm in favor of science that says Taylor Larimore is right in everything he's ever said. But science that says that Taylor Larimore is wrong, that's not science. That's trolling. That's trolling. All of the studies showing I'm wrong are troll studies. I don't need to look at those. That's not science. It's pretend. It's pseudoscience. It's little boys acting like they're men. Little boys put on daddy's tie and daddy's jacket and daddy's shoes, and they clod around the house and they say, I'm a big man, I'm going off to work today in my big office. Taylor Larimore and all the others, all the other passive investing dogmatists, are pretend scientists. They're not real scientists. They favor the trappings of science because the trappings of science are persuasive to many people. People look and they say, wait a minute, this stuff is real. This stuff isn't just, Taylor Larimore's not just giving his opinion. He's got science on his side. But see, it's pseudoscience. It's science fiction. Because on a real science, there's questioning. And that's what's lacking at bogleheads.org. And it's obviously not lacking only at bogleheads.org. It's lacking among all advocates of passive investing. All of them. They do not permit questioning. You know, I've run into all kinds of people that advocate passive investing. And they don't, most of them, don't engage in abusive posting like you saw among the dogmatists at the Vanguard Diehards board. But they all consistently say, we can't admit mistakes. We can't acknowledge that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are in error. We can't do that. Why? What's the big deal? Why can't you admit a mistake? We can't admit a mistake because the whole house of cards tumbles to the ground if we admit the mistake. This whole pretense that we're talking about science, when we tell people to stick at the same stock allocation regardless of prices, it all crashes to the ground if we allow in analytically valid studies, if we allow in reasoned discussion of what the historical data really says. The pose is exposed if you permit balanced, reasonable, realistic discussions. This comes up with all the experts. You know, I talk about the experts all the time, so I'll just give one quick example, but there was a great moment in the great safe withdrawal rate debate when there's a fellow at a loss. He's one of the most abusive posters we've seen. He's up there with John Graney. But he did something great. At a loss did something that I think was great. It's one of the greatest moments in the discussions. He said, you know, I was pointing to, people were saying, oh, Rob, why should we believe you? Why should we believe you that valuations affect long-term returns? Who are you? And I said, well, you respect William Bernstein. You talk about him all the time. William Bernstein, he talks about safe withdrawal rates in his book. He says that valuations affect long-term returns as a matter of mathematical certitude. That's a quote. And he calculates the safe withdrawal rate at the top of the bubble as being 2%, not 4%. Not 4%, like you hear in the old school studies. 2%, like you hear in the new school studies. William Bernstein calculated the number. And I said, any study that gets the number wrong that people use to plan their retirements by 2 full percentage points is analytically invalid. That was the phrase I used. And Adelos and a number of other people were upset that I was using this phrase to describe the old school studies, saying analytically invalid. How dare you? So Adelos, you know, at some point, the whole abusive posting thing gets wearisome. And he says, I'm just going to write an email to William Bernstein and ask him. And I think is just, you know, that's constructive. That's a good way to deal with the problem. He says, Mr. Bernstein, there's this guy on these discussion boards. He's saying that the old school studies are analytically invalid. And he says you support him. He says that you calculated the withdrawal rate to be 2%. And that you say that valuations affect long-term returns. Well, what do you think, Mr. Bernstein? Are these old school studies analytically invalid? And here's what Bill Bernstein said. He said, oh no. He says, they're valid? Of course they're analytically invalid. Now, take that sentence, and what Bernstein is saying is, John Graney is right. Rob Bennett is wrong. John Graney is right. Rob Bennett is wrong. And John Graney has been saying that, you know, he's been saying that I misquote Bill Bernstein for 6 years now. And I acknowledge that Bernstein said it, of course. He did say those words. It's a fact. But the next sentence, Bill Bernstein said, now, he says, those studies have embedded within them a 6.5% real return, which is absurd when valuations are what they are today. So he said, anyone giving thought to using one of those studies to plan a retirement would be well advised to forget about it. Well, that sentence says just the opposite of the previous one. That sentence says Rob Bennett is right, John Graney is wrong. Because when I use the phrase analytically invalid, guess what I mean? What I mean by that phrase is that anyone using that study to plan a retirement would be well advised to forget about it. Forget about it is just New Yorkese for analytically invalid. It's the same idea. So Bill Bernstein is saying two contrary things in a single paragraph. Why? It's because Bill Bernstein is an advocate of passive investing, and passive investing doesn't stand up to scrutiny. And passive investing poses as a science. And that's why it is popular. If everyone could express his or her views on investing openly, we would not be telling people in columns of newspapers to keep their allocation steady when prices get to where they were from 1995 through the first half of 2008. That's dangerous, irresponsible advice. And we would not be telling people that. If it were not for passive investing, and if it were not for the claim that passive investing is science, it's that science claim that gives passive investing its dominance. It gives it power that other investing schools do not have. None of the other investing schools claim to be science in the way that passive investing does. And if it were science, of course, that would be great. But it's not, because science is non-dogmatic. Science is a quest for truth. Scientists are always open to new information. What I believe happened historically is that for many years, investing advice didn't even aspire to science. People just gave their opinions. And I think in the 1960s with Eugene Fama, we started to, I call it to rationalize the investing advice business. We started to make it science. Academics got involved in putting out studies, and we adopted the trappings of science. And I think that was a very positive move. I remember, my first exposure to John Graney was when I found his website on early retirement. It's retireearlyhomepage.com. And this was back in 1998, might have been 1997, I believe it was 1998. And most of his site had to do with safe withdrawal rates, old school safe withdrawal rates. And I knew that at the time, right, I believed that I knew. I was fairly confident that the old school studies were analytically invalid. I wasn't certain, but I was confident. And I loved that site. Not because I believed what Graney said about safe withdrawal rates. I loved it that he was using a scientific approach to investing. And I was doing the same, although, you know, I hadn't done any studies, but I was, when I planned my retirement, I was looking for things that I could count on. And I was trying to look at investing in a quasi-scientific way. But I was not dogmatic about it. I didn't have that element of the passive investing school in me. But I was looking for things I could count on. I had gotten, you know, when I started researching these questions, I was bored by the subjectivity. You know, the thing I mentioned early on about Money Magazine has one article saying one thing and another article saying another, and your head goes around in circles. And I just felt, this isn't getting me anywhere. And I read John Bogle's book, and I felt that it had a science to it. It wasn't pure science, but it had an objectivity to it that to me had power. And that's why I was drawn to John Graney's site in the first place. That's how I got hooked up with him. And so I think the move towards a scientific way of describing investing was a very positive development in history. That was the 1960s, 1970s. The problem is investing can never be a pure science, because there are all these other influences that are non-scientific, and they corrupt it. They corrupt the science. And so you're never going to get the straight story in investing. So there has to be counters to these other influences, so that we can sort out what is science and what isn't. What is science and what is science fiction? One of the problems that I think should be obvious to just about everybody is that most of the information we get about investing comes from, guess who? Comes from people in the stock selling industry. You go to this, go to the Bogleheads board, and you know, they have a motto, and they say, investing advice inspired by John Bogle. Well, my investing advice is inspired by John Bogle. So there's a sense in which I can't fault them for offering investing advice inspired by John Bogle. John Bogle, you know, it's through John Bogle that I learned that valuations affect long-term returns. John Bogle talks about reversion to the mean all the time. But do people not get the problem, of course, I had with the Bogleheads was when they were back at the Vanguard Diehards board, I wrote an article, John Bogle's Big Mistake. I talked about how John Bogle fell for the passive investing concept. And it's what has poisoned much of his investing advice in the years that followed. And these people, some of them, went nuts. You can't criticize John Bogle. But why? If he's putting forward science, then he has to stand up to scrutiny. That's part of the deal. But you see, it's not really science. Bogle, I have no doubt that he likes the scientific aspect of it. But I think he also likes the fact that his investing ideas helped Vanguard sell a lot of stocks, sell a lot of mutual funds. That was his job as founder of that company. And he built it into a huge business. He didn't build it into a huge business by pointing out the flaws in the investing philosophy that was being followed there. Do you see? John Bogle is compromised. There's no getting around it. How many people would go to a car dealership and ask them, do you think I should buy a car now? Now, it's idiotic to even suggest such a thing. If you're not sure whether you should buy a car or not, you ask your friends, or you don't ask somebody in a car dealership. But we do this in the investing field all the time. We take advice from people who make money by selling us stocks. Well, what do you think they're going to tell us to do? Now, there's no harm in rooting your investing ideas in the teachings of John Bogle. As I say, I do that myself. John Bogle has had lots of great ideas. So it would be foolish to ignore those ideas. What purpose would be served? But it's also foolish not to be skeptical and not to be wary that he's slanting things in a way that helps Vanguard sell us stocks. And of course, I don't mean just John Bogle. He's one person doing this. But there are thousands. Anyone who is in the stock selling industry is compromised when it comes to offering investing advice. Anyone that earns a commission is compromised when it comes to offering advice. Even for fee planners, you know, there are these planners today, financial planners, who instead of getting a commission, they do it for a fee, you know, an hourly fee or something. And the theory is they won't be as compromised. They're more independent. They can give you more realistic advice. Well, that's good. That's a good thing. But they're still compromised because they're going to want to give you advice that you want to hear. So if stocks are at insanely high prices, as they were from 1995 through 2008, what kind of advice do you think a for-fee planner is going to be pressured to tell you? He's going to be pressured to tell you that stocks are a great buy. Because stocks are always popular at times when they're overpriced. That's what makes them overpriced. If they weren't popular, they wouldn't be overpriced. So whenever stocks offer a poor long-term value proposition, you're always going to have most advisors telling you to buy them. Now, you know, I don't want to make the error of becoming excessively cynical. I don't want to say that these people wake up in the morning saying, oh, how many people can I cheat today? I think most of these people are like anyone else. They have to make a living. They want to do good things. They want to help people. They want to go to bed at night with a clear conscience. But they have pressures on them. They have pressures on them. If they notice that when they express misgivings about putting too much of your portfolio in stocks, that many of their clients start going across the street to the guy who says, oh, stocks for the long run, buy and hold, timing never works. Then, you know, maybe they read another book and become a little, quote unquote, better informed about what sort of investing advice sells in an insane bull market. The point here is we're mixing two opposite things. We're mixing science, which is objective and truth-oriented, with salesmanship, which is subjective. The salesman always wants to be your friend, and the salesman always spins things. And the goal of salesmanship is not to find truth. The goal of salesmanship is to ring up a sale. Now, I'm not even complaining about the state of affairs. That's not the point. I don't see that there's anything we can do about this state of affairs. Science is a good thing, and I want to use science in learning how investing works because it helps us. It's better to look at data than just to have opinions. You have to root your opinions in something solid. So the trend where science becomes more important, that's a good trend, I think. But with the promotion of the passive investing model that we saw during the insane bull market, it got out of hand. It got way, way, way out of hand. And we're paying a price for it today. We're paying a price for it in a loss of $8 trillion in the last year. And some are saying the possibility of an economic depression. Have we not learned our lesson? We're paying a price. And what happened historically, I believe, is that a great development came along. The rationalization of investing advice. We began to make investing advice more scientific than it had ever been. And that process became corrupted by the desire to sell, the desire to make a buck. And not necessarily with intent. You know, people can do things with mixed motives. And sometimes when you want to make a sale a little too bad, you sort of pass over some uncomfortable realities. But the bottom line is that people concocted these marketing slogans that are half-truths. Timing never works. Some forms of timing don't work. Other forms not only work, some forms of timing are required in order to become an effective long-term investor. But the phrase, timing never works, is not, you know, an argument can be made that it's true. But it's highly misleading because it ignores the fact that long-term timing has always worked. It's a highly misleading statement. A highly dangerous, highly irresponsible statement. And it's been made millions of times by passive investing advocates. What happened is we took something of great power and moved it into the investing realm. This thing of great power is called science. It's a positive development. We allowed it to become corrupted by salesmanship. And we created a monster. What we have now in the passive investing model is not science, it's science fiction. If you took the good ideas that the passive investing people brought to us, you could build on those and you could create a wonderful investing model. That's the model I call rational investing. It's a work in process. It's not completed. But the goal should be to take the ideas that stand up to scrutiny and to use them as the foundation to build a model that actually works, that doesn't bankrupt people, but helps people achieve financial freedom earlier in life. That should be the goal. But as long as we pretend that this pseudoscience is real science, we can't get there. Because the pseudoscience doesn't admit mistakes. Pseudoscientists never admit getting something wrong. How many times do you see somebody who's concocted a marketing slogan get on television and say, oh, it's not true? You know, it's not true that girls are going to fall all over you if you buy this red car, this red convertible. They don't say it's not true. It's marketing. That's the way marketing works. You can't even blame them, you know, that's what they do. But we are taking people like, you know, John Bogle, and I don't mean just him, but we are taking people like that and we're putting them up as if they are scientists when they're the farthest thing from it. They're salesmen. They are salesmen using science, and some of their ideas are very, very good, but some of their ideas are atrociously bad. It's all mixed together, and we've got to unmix it. If we're going to get to the next stage in understanding how stock investing works, we need to drop the pose. We need to separate the true science, the genuine science, from the science fiction, from the junk marketing slogans. Science is always uncertain. That's the test. So something you'll see me doing in my discussions on these podcasts or in my articles is I try to make a point of saying, you know, as often as I can remember to do it, don't listen to Rob Bennett. I'm not God. Take any ideas you can take. If I can share an idea with you and it helps you to understand investing, I'm happy. But please, don't be a fool and say that Rob Bennett seems like a nice guy. I'm going to invest all my retirement money based on what he says. If you do that, Rob Bennett says you are a fool. So if you do it, you're not doing what Rob Bennett says, are you? What Rob Bennett says is take the ideas, think them over carefully before taking any action. Be sure to check out what other people say. Lots of people disagree with Rob Bennett. So, you know how to work the internet or you wouldn't be here. Check out what some people say. Are there people that defend passive investing? Are there people that defend the efficient market theory? Are there people who say it's okay to leave your stock allocation at the same level? Check them out. Read what they have to say. And then try to resolve the differences. And only if you get to a point where you've done that, you've made a serious effort to find holes in what Rob Bennett says, only then can you start to consider making investment decisions based on this way of looking at how stock investing works. And of course, look at people who agree with Rob Bennett. Don't look just at Rob Bennett. Look at Robert Shiller and look at, you know, Cliff Asness and Rob Arnott and John Walter Russell and Ed Easterling and John Malden and all the others. Look at what they say. Because they've had different life experiences. They can tell you things about the subject that Rob Bennett cannot. But science is always uncertain. Science, this I'll give you an example of this, the distinction between how to proceed in a scientific way and how to proceed in a dogmatic, passive investing way. Robert Shiller says a lot of things that show the holes in the passive investing model. So I used to argue at the Vanguard Diehards Board, I used to argue that, you know, they would recommend these books. They had a book list. And that all the books on the list were good books. Random Walk Down Wall Street, Stocks for the Long Run, Common Sense on Mutual Funds. They were all fine books. And I said, why don't we add Shiller's Irrational Exuberance to the list? People need to read that book. That's the one they're missing in this group. All of these books sort of, they're all good, the books on the list, but they all say the same thing. We need some books giving the counter view so that people will think this through more carefully. We need to warn them that they can go too far with this random walk stuff. That can be dangerous. But they didn't want to add Robert Shiller's book to the pile. And people would sometimes link to studies that Shiller has done, showing that the market is not efficient. And the criticism they had was just mind-blowing. They couldn't fault him on the data, because of course he gets the data right. But they'd go to the bottom and they'd say, look at this. Robert Shiller says right here, he says, please don't take what I say as gospel. I am not God. I might have gotten something wrong. Science is a process of learning over time. There are lots of smart people with other viewpoints. As we learn more, we may discover that what I say in this paper isn't right. And they'd say, look, Shiller himself doesn't think he's right. Shiller knows he's wrong. Why should we listen to Shiller if he himself knows he's wrong? People said this. I'm not making this up. I mean, all the words I'm reading are not quotes. I'm giving you the feeling. But people said we should reject Robert Shiller because Robert Shiller has a caveat where he acknowledges that he could have it wrong. It's just like what they did at the Financial Webbring Forum when they said anyone who uses the words I believe has to hit the road. If you're going to participate here, we don't believe things. We know things. We are dogmatist. We cannot be questioned. We are beyond question. And that's when passive investing became dogmatic, that's when passive investing turned sour. It turned into something, it turned from something good. The initial movement was a good movement. It was a movement to make investing analysis more scientific. It turned into something very, very, very bad. And today, they're trapped. The passive investing enthusiasts are trapped because if they acknowledge now what they got wrong, look at all the human misery they've caused by not correcting their mistakes when Shiller first published his studies. Shiller published his first studies in the 1980s. So it's been decades now that everyone who advocates passive investing has been on notice that there is significant research that shows the holes in this theory, and they've ignored that research. Either they're not aware of it, which means they were negligent, because it's part of the job to stay on top of the literature, or they're aware of it and they ignored it. They didn't change their advice. Say they're not sure. Say they're not sure. They see Shiller says one thing, other studies say another thing. Well, the obvious answer, if you are a scientist, is to say, I'm not sure. There are intelligent people on both sides with different viewpoints. I can't tell you who's right and who's wrong. Do you see how different that would be? If Scott Burns had said in his column, when that person asked, should I lower my stock allocation? If he had said, well, I lean towards saying no. I believe in the passive investing school. I think you should stick with it. But I want to tell you, there's some very smart people out there who think that valuations affect long-term returns. And if that's true, long-term returns are going to be very poor days to come. And you may want to moderate your allocation a bit. Do you see how different that answer would be? That answer would invite discussion all over the world. It would invite discussion in the academic community. It would invite discussion in the retire early community, in the indexing community, on blogs, in newspapers, in magazines. They could run a great magazine cover, Money Magazine, you know. Who's right? Schiller says one thing, and then they could, you know, it could be Bogle on the other side. Bogle versus Schiller. Cover story. Who's right? Who's wrong? But see, that's what I'm always told I shouldn't do. I say, Bogle made a mistake. Oh, Rob, you're such a meanie. How did you get to be such a meanie, Rob? He's such a nice man. And you're saying he's wrong? Well, that goes with being a scientist or quoting science in support of your beliefs. If you're going to quote science, you take on as part of the job a willingness to answer questions and a willingness to be responsive to questioning. And that, I have to say, John Bogle lacks. I was banned from a meeting of the Vanguard Diehards board where I intended to ask John Bogle some hard questions about passive investing. Mel Lindauer changed the rules of the conference so that I could not be there. He said he did this to quote-unquote protect Bogle. If Bogle needs protection from Rob Bennett, some guy who posts stuff on the internet, then Bogle does not have science on his side. And if Mel Lindauer thinks that Bogle needs quote-unquote protection from some guy who posts on the internet, Mel Lindauer understands on some level of consciousness that Bogle does not have science on his side. Passive investing started in science. It used to be a science, but it became corrupted. True science is uncertain. True science does not make definitive assessments. There's always an openness. You know, obviously there are different sorts of tests, and some tests can be more definitive than others. But science is always open to discovering something new. Science always grows. Science always heads off in new directions. Science is, in a fundamental sense, science is humble. Science is not arrogant. The passive investing dogmatists are arrogant. It's a distinguishing characteristic of this school of thought. Arrogance. Science is humble. Science is Robert Schiller, frankly. That caveat that Robert Schiller gave at the end of his study where he said, I don't know. He says, oh, we may have done something wrong. None of these tests we have are perfect. I admire Robert Schiller for his caveats. It gives me confidence in what Robert Schiller says when I read those caveats. Whereas I do not admire I admire John Bogle for many, many things, but I don't admire him for his dogmatism. And he is guilty of dogmatism, not to the extent that somebody like Mel Lindauer is. But there is dogmatism in some of Bogle's writings. And I do not admire that strain. And what happened is that Mel Lindauer, you know, focused on that strain. Mel Lindauer is in my mind, the personification of the dark side of John Bogle. He's the dogmatic. He just took all the dogmatic stuff and distilled it and made it his approach. But Bogle has the dogmatic side. Bogle also has a humble side. He has both. But Schiller, from what I've read of Schiller, Schiller comes across as quite humble. He's quite strong in his beliefs. He's obviously well-educated, well-informed, smart, insightful. But he makes a point of taking what I would call a scientific approach of saying, we have more to learn. This is not the definitive assessment. And that, to me, is a sign of confidence. You see, that's a sign of confidence. Science yields confidence. Dogmatism yields insecurity. Passive investing is an insecure investing approach. It will make you insecure. It will make you panicky. It will make you anxious because no one can ever have confidence in a theory that cannot be questioned. Never. That's one of the primary distinctions between passive investing and rational investing. Rational investing is open to questioning, and of course, that can make a rational investor uneasy at times, that he's going to have to acknowledge mistakes. But the good side is that over time, we can gain confidence that we really do know what we're talking about. We don't have to hide from reality. We don't have to pretend. Because once you can acknowledge mistakes, you don't need to pretend. You can be out in the open. You don't have to fear that someone's going to uncover what you've been covering up. So this is where we stand in Investo World today. We've had many years when investing was not viewed as a science. And then we had this wonderful development where we started to move in the direction of science. But unfortunately, that good development was sidetracked with when two developments intervened. One, the quote unquote science of passive investing became reduced to marketing slogans, which is something very different. It became corrupted by commercial concerns. And then two, we had a massive bull market, which led people to have confidence in the marketing slogans. So a lot of people became emotionally attached to these marketing slogans, which is the opposite of science. Emotional attachment to an idea is not science. It's the opposite. So we now have a thing, this monster called passive investing that purports to be science. It purports to be beyond question. But it is really anti-science. It is pseudoscience. It is science fiction. It's not the real world. And the goal of rational investing is to take that thing and get it back on track. Retain the elements of the passive investing school that have stood up to scrutiny. All the good stuff. You know, limit cost. The typical investor should probably be looking at index funds rather than picking stocks, because that takes a lot of research. You know, buy and hold, sticking with the strategy for the long term. Avoiding the noise, you know, tuning out the short-term discussions of whether stocks are going to go up or down. Putting a lot of focus on your stock allocation, because that's the main thing that determines success for the middle-class investor. Those sorts of ideas are gold. We retain those. Those really are rooted in science. Using data of how stocks have always performed in the past to learn how they're likely to perform in the future. All of these ideas, these concepts are gold. But we want to cut out the dogmatism, the foul part of the passive investing school, the part that has taken everything off track, the part that has caused all the human misery we've seen over the past 10 years, as this concept, this approach to investing has become more and more dogmatic while also being less and less true. Because see, the more you get dogmatic when you're under a threat, and the losses that investors have experienced following passive investing have grown larger and larger over the past 10 years. The larger those losses get, the less the passive investing enthusiasts want to admit their errors. They're more insecure now than ever. Whereas if they had acknowledged very early on, you know, that they had made mistakes And they just toned down the language and said, well, there's some evidence this way, there's some that way. If they had taken a true science approach, they never would have gotten into this jam. But the farther they get into the jam, the harder it is to reverse and get back to where they once belonged. What we need, we will never turn investing into a pure science. It cannot be done. But we can use scientific principles to learn important things about investing. But we need to carefully distinguish science from science fiction. And the distinguishing factor is that science is humble and open to new ideas and willing to acknowledge mistakes. Whereas science fiction, the phony stuff, is dogmatic, unyielding, arrogant, unable to acknowledge mistakes. And that's where I think the passive investing model stands today. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.